Brandon Lowe Show, 95 The Sports Fox. You can always take us on the go at 95thesportsfox.com. Of course, subscribe to our podcast over on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. On the line, he played several years there in the NFL for the Chargers. He was drafted out third round there in 2002, and then had a nice little career with the Vikings, and then the Rams, I believe, as recent as 2011. Color commentator for Fox Sports College Football, Ben Lieber joins the show. Ben, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I also failed to mention that you were a phenomenal linebacker for Kansas State there in the Big 12. So, obviously, we want to talk a lot of Big 12 football and a little NFL, but just good to have you on the show. I want to just say, how excited are you to get the football season kicked off?
Super excited. You know, I was just on our local radio station, KFAN, this morning, and we were predominantly talking about NFL and all that stuff, and the host was just saying, can you believe it, we're going to be in New Orleans a month from today for the Vikings' first preseason game. And you know, it's crazy how as a player we always use July 4th as such a marker for us of, all right, OTAs are done, mini camps in the books, and you've got about 2 weeks before 4th of July, and then after that, it's get your mind right, get back to the gym, start hitting everything because you want to peak at the right time in training camp. And really, you know, now that I'm on this side of it, as far as the media goes, it's sort of the same thing. You know, I really enjoyed 4th of July, but as of Monday, I'm devoting more and more time into the office, just getting notes and storylines gathered up and organized, and you know, doing both for Fox on the college side and the Vikings in the NFL. You know, it just can be a lot, and so you know, it is upon us. I mean, football never seems to stop with the draft and free agency, but we had a little bit of a breather, and now we're starting to ramp up again.
Yeah, and then, you know, to jump into that and transition off that, speaking of a lot of things there in free agency, you know, I guess nothing can compare to what's happened in the NBA right now, but, you know, the NFL, the Browns, I want to start with them. A lot of hype behind them right now. Baker Mayfield settled in. You got a chance to watch a lot of him there at Oklahoma. I thought he was going to be a very decent quarterback, at least in the NFL. I wasn't going to go ahead and put him in the hall just yet, but I felt like if he settled in and listened to coaches, he definitely could be a very, very good quarterback in the National Football League, and he's settled in near the end of the year. They got their new head coach there, and then they bring over OBJ, who apparently can throw the ball 100 yards, by the way. So what's the realistic expectations for the Browns this year? I know there's a lot of hype. Are they a playoff team going into this year?
Yeah, I think they are, actually. I think that there is fire to some of that smoke, and they should go in with a lot of high expectations. And I think for, you know, any coach that has the personalities and the egos that they have all of a sudden accumulated, and this newfound confidence and bravado is great. But what comes with that is, how do you manage all that? How do you make sure that everybody keeps it in check? How do you make sure that everybody looks at each game as just one game in and of itself, and not look too far ahead, and not kind of get into yourselves and not start believing your own hype? You know, I do cover the Vikings as a sideline analyst, and that's what happened to the Vikings last year, where they signed Kirk Cousins, and all of a sudden it was like, hey, we've got the missing piece, and look at all the other things that we have. Were poised to make a run, and it didn't happen. They fell short. And what did the players say after the season was, man, we really did believe our own BS. We really did believe the media at the beginning of the season, and they did not take training camp and the minutiae and the grind as serious as they probably should have if people were discounting them. And I really think that's where the Browns are when it comes to mentality is, don't believe the hype. They need to prepare as if they are a winless football team, that they don't have all this stuff in front of them and all this talent. They need to go out there hungry and driven, and they should be, because they've lost for so many years. But I do get this sense that people are crowning them, and handling that ego is going to be a huge deal, because you've seen a lot of teams just have no talent on paper, and all of a sudden they find this right chemistry and they start beating the brakes off people, and they're like, hey, where'd this come from? And they're like, hey, everybody doubted us, we had to prove something. can they keep that hunger and drive to keep proving something? If they do that, I think they're a dangerous football team.
Talking some football, Ben Lieber here. Yeah, moving over to the Steelers, though, local favorite around these parts. A lot of drama with the Steelers. That's putting it lightly. You know, there was a lot of chatter about, you know, does this guy want to play here? Is this enough money? And then Antonio Brown, you know, that whole situation back and forth. You had the Twitter battles. Now that Antonio Brown's now with the Raiders, I guess things have kind of calmed down. But, you know, Steelers hit some bumps in the road last year, and then they had all this, like I said, drama. But with Antonio Brown now gone, I like Juju Smith-Schuster. I think he's one of my favorite players in the league. I think he could build around him. Big Ben, obviously, only getting older. What's really the Steelers as far as going into this year? Are they going to do better than last year because of all the, you know, all this stuff's kind of settled down, or is this the time for the Steelers to start really looking at themselves in the mirror and start really, really looking at, you know, who they need to replace and looking towards the future?
Well, yeah, I think it's good that they got rid of that distraction with Antonio and this mentality of me and making it individual. You know, what made the Steelers so good was they were one of the best fundamentally sound and intimidating football teams in the league for a really long time. Even though they had star players, they're able to keep everything in check and focus in on playing hard-nosed defense, and they've had historically hard-nosed coaches, and I think Mike Tomlin is the same thing. They need to get back to getting after the quarterback. They need to get back to having a nasty attitude and playing as a football team. And you know, I think Big Ben is he also seems like he's part of the problem. You know, there seems to be a little bit of a high maintenance diva-ness to the way he approaches the game and the way that people should view him. And I think if he can just maintain sort of an even keel, get the run game going with Connor, distribute the football around and not just focus on Juju, I think they could have a really good dynamic offense without, you know, necessarily focusing on just one guy. Oh, I've got to get Antonio the ball. Oh, I've got to make sure that he's happy.
Yep.
I don't think that Smith-Schuster has that ego where he has to have the ball all the time. I think he just wants to focus on winning. And if they can do that, and if Big Ben can do that, I think they can get back to where they need to be and where they historically have been.
By the way, also great vibes from Schuster as well. His YouTube channel, if anybody hasn't checked that out, is phenomenal. He does a lot of those pranks and his dances and stuff. So he has a lot of fun. So that type of positive vibe is always good for the locker room as well. Let's move over to Mountaineers NFL. You know, we saw Will Grier go to the Panthers, a team that he rooted for as a kid. He was right down the road from his family's home. He used to root for them in the stands. He used to watch them on television. And a lot of people thought possibly he might go to the Patriots there near the end of the first round. You got to see him play in college. You got to probably see, you know, you probably studied some of his tape and such preparing for your gig with Fox Sports. But, you know, I thought maybe I kind of expected he would go in later rounds. I didn't think he was going to be a first round quarterback. I thought he might go second round, but it was a kind of a good story there with the Panthers. What's sort of the future there with the Panthers, if any? I know Cam Newton is the guy, but he's had some issues with injuries. Is there, an actual future for Will Grier there with the Panthers?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting system for him, because what Norv Turner typically does is he likes deeper drops, and that's part of the reason why I think Cam was not successful last year, and they operate out of shotgun, and then Cam himself will take, you know, an extra three or four steps back, and it really allows for an easy pass rush, and he got harassed a lot, and he had to deal with that shoulder injury, and that is a vertically built offense. And I worry a little bit with Will's abilities that can he survive in a system where they do want you to stay in the pocket a little bit more. They want you to play a little bit more old school. And I think Cam tried to break out of that last year, and they're allowing some flexibility, but again, he was banged up, and they don't want him to run that much. I thought Will had a lot of Baker Mayfield to his game. It's a little bit of backyard football. I think he throws the ball very accurately on the run. I think he can improvise very well. And not to say that he's going to improvise because he doesn't know the offense or he doesn't have the timing down. I just think that he knows when things do break down and things do go off schedule, as they like to say, that he can still make plays and he can stay behind the line of scrimmage and he can still deliver the football down the field. I really liked Will when I watched him in college. I love his demeanor. I love how mature he is, how hungry he seems. I was actually secretly hoping the Vikings would pick him up and he could learn from Cousins, and they could also have a little bit more of a dynamic presence if Cousins ever went down. So I think they got a great quarterback. I just worry that the scheme may not fit his style.
Yeah, that's the same thing I was kind of thinking with Norv Turner. And you're right. He likes to bounce around. Of course, made one hell of a throw against Texas. Didn't even set his feet, just launched over the Gary Jennings, which helps to have a wide receiver like that as well to haul it in. But speaking of wide receivers, NFL, I just want to talk about David Sills. I was shocked he wasn't drafted at all. I think that shocked a lot of people. You know, a lot of Mountaineer fans were kind of shaking their heads a little bit. You know, I didn't expect him to be a first rounder. But I did expect him to be drafted. Now he has an opportunity, though, with a team like Buffalo that doesn't really have that go-to guy. What do you think Sills is able to do there in Buffalo?
Well, it's going to be interesting because I believe that, yes, he should have been drafted. But the way that the NFL is going is it's sort of mirroring the college level where they want – much more short area quickness type of guys. Guys that can get off the line, guys that can create separation. The big body receivers sometimes just aren't as coveted anymore. And I also think that he is such a big frame that I think people worried that as he grows into his man body, is he going to be more of a tight end? Is he going to be more of this flex type of player? And if so, how is he going to fit in said offense? I love what Buffalo's doing. I think they're going to focus on, you know, more of the run game, give Josh Allen a little bit more of a breather and tell him, hey, you don't have to be this dynamic athlete all the time. And his accuracy has been a little bit of an issue. So why not give him some guys that have big-time catch radius? You don't have to be as accurate as some of these other quarterbacks. Playing with smaller receivers, get some big bodies around him, allow his receivers to make some plays and use their bodies to shield the defenders and not be so pinpoint with every throw. So I think that's how they're approaching their new quarterback system. And if that is accurate, then I think he's going to get some requisite playing time and get some decent looks, because for everything that I mentioned, he can do that. He can go up above people. He can reach around people. I think he's deceptively faster than people think, especially in a straight line speed situation. So, you know, the Vikings do play them in the preseason, the fourth preseason game. So I'm excited to see how he plays in that game out there in Buffalo.
All right, not to throw you, and this is going to get weird, I'm sure you saw this story, not to throw you kind of, you know, out there on the spot, but Coach Vrabel with the Titans said that he would cut his own penis off to win a Super Bowl. You played in the league for several years. Have you ever wanted a Super Bowl so bad that you would cut your own penis off? That's what I want to know.
No, I will definitively say no. I've been to the NFC Championship game, and I came so close, and I knew that in 2009 when we got beat by the Saints that we would have went on to beat the Colts just like they did. So that was disheartening, but I would never want to cut my own penis off to have a ring and to say that I'm a Super Bowl champion. I know that a lot of us can say that if you've been married for a long time, just like he was saying metaphorically, I think all of our penises have been cut off anyway. So there's not, we're not using it much, but come on, I would maybe lose. I could take my second toe off. I've got abnormally long second toes. I could just take those off, yeah, and I'd be fine. Yeah. I could take a Ronnie Lott pinky off. No big deal. But yeah, I'm not losing my manhood. There's no way.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I can go for any other part, as long as I could play or coach, and I'd be okay other than that. And so I had to throw that out there. You're a competitor. You play in the league. So I just wanted to get your take on that. I couldn't believe when I saw the story. I was like, oh my gosh, like, man, this guy's intense. I mean, I know of his time, you know, throughout college and stuff, he was an intense guy, but man, I when I saw that, I really thought that was like an Onion story when it went through the
I did too. I had to research it a couple of times and just look at different stories. Like, all right, I need to get a couple different sources here because this can't be true that he said that. And obviously, we all know that he's joking, and we know, you know, what he means by it.
Yeah.
But man, to choose that body part, I would say, hey, I'll cut off my left arm or something, or hey, I'll lose a leg, but. Cut your junk off. I don't think it means that much.
Let's move over to some college football. Of course, you do a phenomenal job there for Fox Sports. Enjoy your coverage there. And let's start with Kansas State since you play there. They, the legendary Coach Snyder who's stepped down, and they bring in a guy which you are familiar with this area growing up. You know, I believe you're from Iowa there, and you went to high school, in Dakotas as well. So now you bring in a guy like North Dakota State who's won multiple FCS national championships and Chris Klieman. Give me your thoughts on that. I mean, I know the legendary coach is gone, and now you got this new guy, but he's been successful. This is a big gig for him now. This is the Big 12. This is big boy football. What are your expectations for the Wildcats?
Oh, man. I mean, not a whole lot in year one, kind of like any new coach. I mean, much like what Neil Brown is facing as well. But I think that the hire was fantastic. And, you know, Coach Snyder is a legend. They tried to replace him with Ron Prince when he retired the first time. And they tried to do what I think a lot of coaches think, or a lot of athletic directors think, that they have to have the pendulum swing the other way. Like, okay, we've done it for so long. We need to be more progressive. Let's find a progressive coach. And it didn't work out. They did produce Josh Freeman, who had a tremendous college career. But I really think at a place like Kansas State, you have to know what you're getting into at Kansas State. And I'm sorry, but you're not going to become an Oklahoma or a Texas when it comes to adding skill. And I do think that they added the right type of guy who runs a pro-style offense. So it's going to be a little bit of a departure from what Snyder had morphed into, getting back to more what Snyder was known for. A pro-style offense is going to focus on running the football, and he's a hard-nosed defensive guy. And he's going to have a little baptism by fire going into the Big 12 with all the high-powered offenses. But, you know, North Dakota State, they face their fair share of spread offenses, RPOs, all those things. So it's not going to be anything new. It's just going to be, you know, it's going to happen a little bit faster. And you know, he probably doesn't have the players right now that he thinks he needs to have to run the offense and defense. But from a philosophical perspective, I think they found the guy with the right mentality to take exactly what Snyder has built and carry that forward. And I really, and to me, you look at where Klieman's at age-wise, I don't think that this is a school that he's looking to have some success and then jump into a bigger Power 5 team. I think this is a guy that would be very happy being at Kansas State for 15 years and really continuing a legacy at K-State.
Speaking of that, you know, a guy that Les Miles, let's stick with this new coaching thing, taking the job at Kansas. When I first heard he was going to take the job, I was a little kind of confused just based off the fact of all the things he did at LSU and the SEC. He retires, he does kind of the media gig for a while, doesn't want to coach, and then he goes, okay, well, I'll take the Kansas gig, which is good for the Big 12, especially if they start winning. It just, you know, makes your league stronger. Are you surprised that Les Miles took the job at Kansas?
You know, I really am. Just because I don't think that I haven't done a ton of research on his connections, but I don't think he has a lot of connections to Kansas football. I don't think that he has a lot of connections to Missouri football and Iowa and Nebraska football. So that whole quad state area, recruiting area, I don't think that he's got a ton of experience in, and it's going to take him a while to develop those high school relationships when it comes to recruiting. You know, now can he swing and go get a pretty dynamic JUCO guy or this high school player that maybe, you know, just fell through the cracks? Yes, he's going to have those connections down south, but I think everybody knows that the Nebraskas of the world and Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas State, Kansas, you need to recruit your core base from the local area and show the local high schools that you care and that you want to bring in those guys. And So I do worry that maybe it's not going to work as well as they'd hoped the name recognition would get them. And the fact that, now, I may be wrong, and maybe I'm making this up, but I swear I heard when he first got hired, he was telling people publicly that, yep, I'm going to be here for 3 or 4 years, and that's it, and I'm done. Mm. And that's not the way you want to go about recruiting high school players, no. To say this publicly and say, hey, come to my program, but you probably won't see me be the head coach the whole time that you're here in the 4 to 5 years. Wow. And now all of a sudden it's recruiting ammunition for all the other coaches to say, if you're getting recruited by KU, guess what? That coach doesn't plan on being there. So come to us. Yeah. So I didn't like how he first started out.
We're moving our way towards West Virginia, but I just want to get your thoughts on Oklahoma as well. Jalen Hurts comes in, Alabama transfer. He's only lost 2 games his entire college career. He's won national championships. Now he's in this Oklahoma program that's really completely different from Nick Saban and how he runs his program, and the fact that Lincoln Riley is, I guess you would say, more hands-on as far as being a player's coach, you know, that cliche player's coach situation, but he likes creativity, he likes his quarterbacks to be creative in the pocket, and here's Jalen Hurts coming in. He's got back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, number one overall picks. How's Jalen Hurts going to fit in this system, and what do you see out of Oklahoma? Because I think the defense, they're a national title contender every year, obviously, it's Oklahoma, but the defense has really, really kept Oklahoma back from potentially winning a national championship. The defense gets locked in. I think Oklahoma has to be a favorite to win a national championship.
Well, and that's just always been the thing. Obviously, you just mentioned that with Oklahoma is their defense. And, you know, I've been through, you know, Mike Stoops was at K-State when I was there. I know what that defense is like. And obviously, the offenses in the Big 12 have morphed into something that I've never seen before. But they've always had the talent. They've just never seemed like they put the true emphasis on the defense. And I think from a whole Big 12 picture, I'm super excited about this season, because I think this is the start of the transition where the Big 12 becomes a little less sexy when it comes to scoring, and you're going to see a lot of great defenses emerge in the next couple of years. And since we're talking about Oklahoma, you know, with Alex Grinch coming over from Oklahoma State, but really making his name at Washington State, and I think that's really important. You know, I think a lot of people look at Ohio State and say, oh, well, he's been in the Big Ten at the highest level, and look at the success they've had there. But to me, what really means that he's a great coach is what he did at Washington State. Washington State is a hard place to recruit, much like Kansas State, much like West Virginia. Yeah. And to get less than the talent that you would normally get in the Pac-12 to come to Pullman, Washington, and put together just fierce defenses. I mean, watching Washington State was a treat. Obviously with Mike Leach in the offense, but that defense was fun to watch. You know, in 2017, they were top five in the nation when it comes to allowing passing touchdowns. And I think that sort of success is what's going to help Oklahoma, and it's going to help their offense, because you've got to replace 4 offensive linemen. You're going to have to really rely on a running game. And you've got Jalen, who, as you kind of laid out, is he going to have sort of the creativity and the skill set to follow up 2 Heisman Trophy winners? I think that is obviously the biggest question mark. It's the biggest shoes to fill in all of college football. Can he handle that pressure? I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. But if they don't have a running game and their defense doesn't help them out and they've got to break in 4 new offensive linemen, it's going to be a rough year for him.
Combining the 2 underneath Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa State in that Big 12 media preseason poll, which I think those are garbage anyway, because I let them play. You know, everybody's just kind of predicting at this point. But I honestly believe, and I know everybody always talks about Texas being back, and everybody loves the sexiness of Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game because they're the two, you know, blue blood programs of the Big 12. But I'm really thinking that people are sleeping on Iowa State. I've been high up on Iowa State each year. I think Coach Campbell's done a phenomenal job. It's much like West Virginia or maybe a Kansas State, as you mentioned, that, you know, if they get 8 or 9 wins consistently each year, you know, that's a good year. They're not expected to win, you know, be in the national championship picture every year. I mean, fans want that, but, you know, Iowa State's just got that kind of blue-collar mentality. And you saw them beat West Virginia last year, there in Ames. It's just a tough team, tough mentality. You talk about defense. There's something about Iowa State this year, and I may be wrong, but I feel like this is the year that possibly Iowa State sneaks up and makes a Big 12 title appearance. I know everybody's high up on Texas right now, and obviously Oklahoma for good reason. I think Oklahoma should be a favorite to be in there and return again, but that two spot, I really, really think Iowa State could sneak up and grab that spot. Do you agree with that or not?
Don't you feel like we say this every year about Iowa State?
Yeah.
I mean, it is. I think if we went back and looked at the last 7 or 8 years of preseason predictions, and it was either under the heading of team to watch or sleeper team, it was Iowa State. And it always has been, because they've always seemed to be percolating just under the surface of, man, they have a really good running back, or man, they have a really good receiver, or, you know, their quarterback, if they can build off the success of last year, you know, you better watch out. And I'm with you, and I'm going to say it again, just like you've said it today, and you've said it in the past, that Iowa State has all the makings to be a team that can make a run in the Big 12. And having sat down and called Iowa State games and personally sat and talked to Matt Campbell, I believe in everything that he is selling for that program. He is a legit coach. He's a legit star in the making in the coaching ranks. He doesn't BS you. He's very honest. He has this demeanor that you're gravitated towards, and you can already tell that he's stealing talent out of the Big Ten with his connections in Ohio and Pennsylvania. He's making the facilities, which they have tremendous facilities at Iowa State, he's highlighting those things. He's making it a true destination in the Big Ten or Big 12. And he's got a defense with John Haycock that is stout, and they're really good, and they're building talent, and they're getting not just 2 and 3 stars, they're getting 4-star guys to commit to Iowa State. If Purdy obviously can, you know, again, build on, you know, steal the lines again, build on what he did last year, they do have to replace some production at running back and wide receiver, but they seem to be in this reloading mode, which, you know, hasn't been seen at Iowa State in a long time. Yes, you got to watch out for Iowa State, and I think that they're happy laying in the weeds, having everybody talk about Oklahoma and Texas, and they're just going to go up and snipe people week after week.
Yeah, and you look at their schedule. I mean, they do have a tough schedule. I mean, it is tough every game, every week in the Big 12. But, you know, obviously on the road to Lubbock, it's going to be kind of tough. They do have to go to road to Morgantown, as you know, that's always tough to play there. They do have Texas at home. They do have to go on the road to Oklahoma. So they do have some pretty big games there. They got to play Oklahoma and Texas, I believe, back to back. So that's going to be something to watch out for. But yeah, Iowa State. Everybody sleeps on them, and I'm with you every year. I'm like, I think this is the year. But this year, there's just something about that, them sneaking up. All right, finally, best for last. Don't want to take any more of your time. I feel like I've taken up, like, all your time. But
you're good.
Neil Brown coming to Morgantown from Troy. There was a couple names people were mentioning. You know, Luke Fickell was in the mix for a little while. But ultimately, Neil Brown gets a job. He brings his guys in. Let's start with Neil Brown as a coach. He's talked about all these principles. He's talked about all these things he's going to bring to this already established culture and tradition there in Morgantown. Let's start with Neil Brown. What's your initial response to the hiring of Neil Brown?
You know, I think it was obviously an interesting hire. He certainly wasn't on a lot of people's radars, but you know, you start looking at his resume and what he's done at Troy, and yes, it was a little rocky at Troy and turn that thing around, but you know, he really turned that into a great program. And he's a fresh outlook. He's got a heck of a pedigree when it comes to his offensive philosophy. You know, I love the fact that he's taken this challenge where everybody else has said, taken the attitude of, well, this is a really hard place to recruit, and they almost undersell themselves before they take the job. And he's taken the opposite approach and said, look, I'm embracing this. This is a great place. I don't see why we can't get kids to come here. You know, you look at the 5 or 6 hour drive radius that he talks about, and he's like, why wouldn't you come to this beautiful campus where football is a passion for these fans, and winning has been, established for many years, and I love that sort of fresh approach. I like what he's going to build. I like what he's doing. Obviously, I think there's a big turnover in talent, but when it comes to personalities, I think he's a great fit there.
Yeah, there's obviously those holes we just mentioned that went to the NFL. That's going to be a big thing. Quarterback is a question. Obviously, a lot of people point to Austin Kendall, the Oklahoma transfer that comes in. When you have a transfer come in, especially from a school like Oklahoma, you automatically assume that he's going to be your starting quarterback. But then they were also brought in a kid from Bowling Green with a lot of experience as well. The Jared Dagey kid, and then you got Trey Lowe. You got Allison, you got guys that we don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Then you had some major players on defense enter the transfer portal. Also Marcus Sims on the offensive side. So there are a lot of holes there. I think this is going to be a wait and see situation for Coach Brown, as you should, because it takes a couple years for you to establish anything, as you know, especially recruiting cycles and classes when you want to get your kids over there. But I do think recruiting-wise, especially this new class, I don't know if you paid attention to some of that, but they have even gone across the pond to get kids from Europe, and they've done a phenomenal job of bringing in some really highly regarded, as far as stars-wise, hosting these kids and at least getting them on campus, which I think is extremely important. So they've done a great job in recruiting efforts.
Yeah, they really have, and I believe that they're the only team in the Big 12 to be in that sort of European development system. So they really have an upper hand when it comes to selling not only West Virginia, but selling the Big 12 in general. And there's not a whole lot of competition. Obviously, there are other Power 5 teams that are out there in the same development world. But as far as the Big 12, they've kind of put their foot down and made a stamp. Who knows what these guys are going to turn out to be, but I saw that they got that tight end from Sweden that has tremendous frame already, and who knows how big he can end up being, and if he's a true Swede, as we stereotypically think. I mean, this guy could be a right tackle by the time he's all done.
Yeah,
if he's athletic as he is, but at 230 pounds already as a young guy. So, the fact that they're open, I think that's the most important thing, is they're not going to pigeonhole themselves into what they traditionally think is recruiting just around the area. They're going to keep their eyes and ears open for things that are, far and wide in the United States. And then obviously, like you said, going over to Europe to find guys, it sounds like they're on the right track. And if they can find something special overseas and start developing those relationships, I think there's going to be some great talented guys that just fall in their lap.
Finally, what's the realistic as far as wins for West Virginia this year? Because they do have a pretty tough schedule, non-conference. They got to go to Missouri. They do welcome in North Carolina State. They open with James Madison, as we know, is a power at the FCS level. Excuse me. So that's also not. An easy game. James Madison's knocked off the likes of Virginia Tech most recently there in Blacksburg. So there is, non-conference portions, not any pushover. Of course, Drew Locke in Missouri is gone, and, the North Carolina State quarterback's gone. So they're going to be kind of looking at their quarterback situation there. And then, of course, you look at the Big 12. There's still a lot of tough games there, including even Kansas, where it's a weird, as you know, place to play. And you could lose there, as Texas has found out before, and even West Virginia back in 2013. So just even that, and then all the other games in the Big 12, I'm trying to figure out where the wins come for West Virginia.
Yeah, you and me both. I mean, you're looking at it probably more optimistic lens than I am, but I'm thinking, two wins, three wins maybe for this team right now. So I wish I could sell some optimism, but I think for all the things that you've laid out, that you do start looking at even games like in Lawrence, where, yes, it's a weird place to play, and maybe they actually bring some fans in because of the excitement, but it sort of feels like you're playing an inter-squad scrimmage there sometimes, because there's just a lack of fan base and a lack of energy, and that can really just bring your team down after traveling, across the country and then getting off the plane and staying in the hotel, and you get out to the field and you expect there to be this, this ability for the crowd and the energy to bring you up, and it just doesn't. So It is it's a weird home field advantage to not have a crowd there. So that could be a game that they just aren't up for. So two to three games is what I'm looking at.
He's Ben Lieber, Fox Sports College Football. Make sure to watch him throughout the year. You do a phenomenal job, man. You've been more than courteous with your time. I feel like I took up like your whole day here, but just enjoyed our conversation. Love talking football, man, and I appreciate the time, Ben.
Hey, anytime. Love to talk to you, and have a great weekend, man.